My name is Cyrus Engineer, and I'm a faculty at Johns Hopkins in the United States, and I would like to welcome you all to this teleclass that I'm hosting, and I have the pleasure of introducing a very eminent personality on the call, was actually a co-founder of this series of teleclasses that has permeated and grown over the years to many, many countries across the world. Professor Dr. Syed Sattar, he is a professor of microbiology and also the founding director of the University of Ottawa's Center for Research on Environmental Microbiology. Professor Sattar is an extremely distinguished person in the field of environmental microbiology and has published several papers, been invited for talks, and actually is the gold standard or the litmus test on whether a chemical or a product actually deserves to be on the market. And in fact, it would be hard to not have Professor Sattar because there are a lot of products in the market that need to be tested and don't necessarily make it, and we all heavily, at least when I used to work at WHO, depended on Professor Sattar's expertise to run those highly specialized and sophisticated tests on making sure that it has the properties necessary to disinfect, decontaminate, or kill the microbes. Professor Sattar is a registered microbiologist at the Canadian College of Microbiologists. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Microbiology and also a fellow of the American Academy of Hygiene Scientists. He has received numerous international awards, including the Martin Favero Lectureship in 2007, the OCRI Award in 2007, the Hygieia Medal of the Rudolf Schultke Foundation in 2009. In December of last year, he received the prestigious Queen Elizabeth's Diamond Jubilee Medal for his community and professional services. Professor Sattar is also on numerous editorial boards, more specifically on the American Journal of Infection Control and the International Journal of Infection Control. He is an advisor to several countries on microbicidal policies, microbial policies affecting the environment. He's the advisor to the Canadian and the U.S. governments, as well as the World Health Organization. I had a brief meeting with Professor Sattar when we were working on the revised or the finalized hand hygiene guidelines when he was a member of the task force. He still continues to be a member of that task force, and indeed it is a pleasure to introduce and to bring the expertise to all of you from Professor Sattar. Today he's going to talk about high-touch environmental surfaces and how in the spread of HAI and the products and the testing for these products and what considerations we need to make in considering some of these products. So with that, I will turn the floor over to Professor Sattar to conduct the presentation.
Thank you, Cyrus, and good day, everyone. I hope you have your slides on the computer. So I am just starting with the title slide. I am honored and delighted to be lecturing in the WHO teleclass series as coordinated by Weber Training. I'm happy that the idea of teleclasses, as initiated by Weber Training and my center over 12 years ago, has been adopted by WHO's patient safety program to provide cutting-edge information to infection preventionists around the globe. As an academic, I regularly interact with a variety of healthcare settings, as well as government regulators and manufacturers. Of course, I also actively work on the topic in the lab. This gives me a unique perspective on what I am about to discuss today. Next slide, please. For over four decades now, my research has focused on the behavior of microbial pathogens in the environment and on finding sustainable means to interrupt their environmental spread. Funds for such work come from public and private sources. I also provide expert advice to numerous governments, international agencies, hospitals, as well as companies. Currently, I'm a member of the board of directors of Virox Technologies, which is based in just outside of Toronto, Canada. Any necessary mention of specific products or services here will be for information purposes only and would not constitute any endorsement by me, my center, or the World Health Organization. Next slide, please. Thank you, Paul, again for coordinating the teleclasses. Some work to be presented here was in collaboration with Tony Sharp of Filterflex, Professor Jaive Mayard and staff at Cardiff University, Wales, and Ms. Tina Bradley and staff at the University Hospitals in Birmingham, England. I also thank my students and staff for their help over the years. Next slide, please. You will agree that high-touch environmental services are now receiving the attention they deserve as vehicles for healthcare-associated infections. Some key publications on this topic are listed at the end. This recognition has caused a corresponding upsurge in marketing of products and technologies to combat such spread and inevitably spawn the good and the bad that come with any such business opportunity. Here I hope to give you a critical look at the current status with a glance ahead. Next slide, please. These terms are key to understanding what I am about to present. A microbicide, in its broadest context, is any physical or chemical agent that can kill microbes. This is a simple, self-explanatory, and technically correct term. For our purposes, the term includes disinfectants and antiseptics, even though no antiseptics will be discussed today. Microbicides are often called germicides in North America and biocides in Europe. For me, neither term is suitable because germicide is a colloquial word with emphasis on the killing of germs, which most of us understand as disease-causing microbes only. On the other hand, biocide is too broad a term and refers to chemicals capable of killing anything. Term decontamination refers to any decrease in the level of chemical, radioactive, and or microbial contaminants. For our purposes here, it denotes the combined action of physical removal as well as killing of microbes by wiping. A major focus here is on chemicals to decontaminate high-touch environmental surfaces which are inanimate, hard, and non-porous. Porous materials such as fabrics are commonly laundered and rarely decontaminated by wiping. Next slide, please. Though this illustration depicts high-touch surfaces as hot spots only in a patient ward, there are numerous such surfaces elsewhere in healthcare and other settings. To better define the term, Aslaj and colleagues in 2010 observed 50 interactions between staff and patients and identified high-touch as bed rails, surfaces, supply carts, overbed tables, and intravenous pumps. Quite likely, each one of us could draw up a list with these and many additional items in it with a strong potential for disagreement. Therefore, let's focus on generalities at this stage. Surfaces with biofilms on them will not be discussed here. Next slide, please. Overriding consideration here is the potential of a given surface to harbor and donate pathogens during routine casual contact. Thus, any focus on decontamination of environmental surfaces must include a combination of the following: high probability of contamination pathogens, the ability to allow for pathogen survival, the capacity to donate pathogens with relative ease, and location and frequency of direct contact with hands and or mucous surfaces. Our work and that of others with a variety of pathogens has shown that fabrics and other porous materials in general have an inherently lower potential to support microbial survival and are also much less efficient in releasing contaminating pathogens. Next slide, please. Here it is crucial to remember that except when combating a specific type of outbreak, high-touch surfaces are routinely decontaminated with no specific pathogen as the target. Therefore, and with the notable exception of spore formers such as Clostridium difficile, the applied decontamination routine must be strong, efficient, and diligent enough to successfully deal with most bacterial, viral, and fungal pathogens. Such decontamination is not expected to render the surface pathogen-free, but reduce its level as low as possible with routine wiping. Here I reiterate that certain types of high-profile pathogens neither survive well on high-touch environmental surfaces, nor do such surfaces play a significant role in their transmission. Good examples here are influenza viruses, HIV, and the SARS virus. Quite fortunately, such pathogens are also much more susceptible to common environmental surface disinfectants. Therefore, an important take-home message here is to discourage focus based on the fear factor when considering environmental surface decontamination. Please also note that if environmental surface disinfectants are tested properly using suitable surrogates and then used with diligence, high-profile pathogens such as influenza and HIV will automatically be taken care of. Examples of pathogens for greater focus are, of course, the spore Clostridium difficile using sporicidal wipes, norovirus and other non-enveloped viruses, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, vancomycin-resistant Enterococcus, Acinetobacter baumannii, and to repeat, targeting the more resistant should cover the weaker ones automatically. Next slide, please. Even today, many environmental surface disinfectants have long list of irrelevant organisms on their labels. This is more so in the U.S. than elsewhere. This simply has to change, and there is no scientific basis for it. On the contrary, such lists create undue confusion, which is a disservice to infection preventionists. Here, much of the blame goes to government regulations as well as infection preventionists themselves. In effect, many currently marketed disinfectants are no more than weak bactericides or low-level products. This is mainly due to the inappropriate nature of government-recommended test protocols for microbicidal activity. The testing does not incorporate several key factors, and in the field, microbicidal activity is further compromised due to much shorter contact times, a high volume to surface area ratio, soil load, as well as disinfectant demand from applicator as the surface being wiped. I would venture to say that much of environmental surface disinfection does no more than generate a false sense of security. As you will see later, such practices may actually enhance the risk of pathogen spread. Quite remarkably, disinfectant claims are not based on wiping, which is how they are commonly applied. More on this later. Next slide, please. This is another one of my pet peeves. Believe me when I say that the process of government review and registration of environmental surface disinfectants remains flawed and outdated. Its very nature often makes it too slow to incorporate newer findings and improvements in test methodologies. Then there continues to be a lack of regional and global harmonization. The slow and restrictive process of rulemaking also discourages innovation. This issue needs an urgent review if we are to make significant strides in reducing the impact of healthcare-acquired infections. Next slide, please. There is now incontrovertible evidence from Dr. Phil Carling's numerous studies on how poorly the housekeeping staff in healthcare settings are trained and monitored. When high-touch surfaces are wiped, the process is quite cursory and potentially counterproductive. The fact that the wipe or applicator has its own disinfectant demand is often not accounted for in label claims and use directions. Moreover, the contact time during wiping is only seconds, with minuscule amounts of disinfectant deposited on the target surface. Currently available wipe test methods need improvements. Next slide, please. This figure comes from a very recent review of ours. It illustrates the key role of wiping in the decontamination of environmental surfaces in general. In spite of this, there just isn't sufficient emphasis on the critical contribution that the physical action of wiping makes in surface decontamination. Next slide, please. This figure also comes from the same publication and further defines how a variety of factors can impact the outcome of wiping. A clear understanding of these factors is absolutely essential to designing meaningful wipe test protocols. Next slide, please. I hope by now you agree that wiping is essential and common for the decontamination of high-touch surfaces. Here, let's quickly look at the pros and cons of the process. Points in favor of wiping is that it is a convenient means of combining the disinfecting action of a chemical with the mechanical or physical action of wiping. The use of pre-soaked wipes in particular avoids the need to prepare an in-use dilution of a disinfectant. Number two, there are also substantial time savings due to short contact times and greater workplace and environmental safety because of smaller disinfectant volumes required. Further, target surfaces can be wiped essentially without any regard to their orientation and or geometry. It reduces resuspension and spreading of dust. It enhances occupational safety by reducing respiratory exposure to chemicals. Things that are against wiping or the negative aspects of wiping are using an unsuitable disinfectant or applying a good one inappropriately can inadvertently spread localized contamination over a wider area. A wipe or applicator often has disinfectant demand. Such demand may increase in proportion to the area wiped. Discarding used wipes adds to the solid waste stream. The US EPA would like to see wipes made out of compostable fabrics. Prepackaged wipes do cost more in comparison to the use of reusable fabric pieces in spray and wipe procedures. Next slide, please. ASTM International and AOAC International, two well-known standard-setting organizations, each one has a wipe test protocol. The EPA has a guidance document for the purpose. Those methods are semi-quantitative at best and also do not properly reflect the field use of wipes. More recently, ASTM has accepted an EPA-developed standard for testing pre-soaked wipes against vegetative bacteria. Professor Mayard's group in Cardiff in Wales developed a method which uses drill bit mounted wipes and published several peer-reviewed papers using the method. Their work clearly showed the spread of localized contamination over a wider area with use of ineffective disinfectants. I believe that the topic for testing wipes is ripe for action. And as a general and field-relevant method, is urgently needed for research and development, international standardization and product registration. Here is what we are doing to address the gap. Next slide, please. We at CREM have invented a device with the help of Dr. Tony Sharp to test disinfectant soaps, wipes, or towelettes. I call it the Viperator for obvious reasons. The device incorporates many of the variables illustrated earlier. For example, it can test wipes at a set pressure during contact, time for wiping, type and number of wiping motions. Stainless steel discs of 1 centimeter diameter are used as prototypical hard non-porous surfaces. Each disc receives only 10 microliters of the test microbial suspension in a soil load, and the dried inoculum wiped for only 5 to 10 seconds. Please note, 5 to 10 seconds. The eluates from the discs are assayed for viable organisms and log reductions calculated. Touching of used wipes to uncontaminated discs can assess the transfer of viable organisms to clean surfaces. The device is suitable for work with all major pathogen types. It can be used with inanimate or animate surfaces and also to test pathogen transfer between them. An international collaborative has just been completed and the results now being readied for publication. Next slide, please. This table addresses the concern that I had expressed earlier on about the choice of surrogates for testing microbicides. Here is what we have recently proposed as surrogates for testing wipes against various classes of microbial pathogens. In our view, this selection of 8 organisms covers all major classes of nosocomial pathogen. They are all available as standard strains and also survive relatively well the inoculum drying on test carriers. They can be handled at biosafety level 2, available in most microbiology labs. I draw particular attention to the feline caliche virus as a surrogate in tests for viricidal activity. It is the last organism listed on the table. It is a small, non-enveloped virus, relatively resistant to environmental surface disinfectants, and safe and easy to handle. A word on Acinetobacter baumannii as well, which is an increasingly important gram-negative nosocomial pathogen. Unlike other gram-negatives, this organism survives drying well and is also inherently more resistant to antibiotics as well as microbicides. In our experience, any and all of the listed organisms can be readily used to test disinfectant wipes for label claims. Next slide, please. This graph, based on our as yet unpublished work, shows the removal and transfer of Staphylococcus aureus using 4 types of commercial wipes with different types and levels of actives. Dried bacterial contamination on each stainless steel disc was about 1 million or 6 logs of colony-forming units. Please note, the wiping using the Viperator was for 5 seconds only at a pressure of 150 grams per centimeter square, which is not a very high pressure in terms of how wiping is conducted. Only one type of wipe could reduce the contamination to an undetectable level, whereas the others showed a minimum 99.9% or 3 log reduction. The inset graph shows the transfer of Staph aureus to a clean disc touched with the wipe just used on a contaminated disc. Only the wipe that had reduced the contamination to an undetectable level on the originally contaminated disc showed no transfer. Next slide, please. Those experiments were repeated with Acinetobacter baumannii as example of a gram-negative nosocomial pathogen. The challenge level of the bacterium on each disc was between 5 and 6 logs. As shown in the graph, three of the four wipes could render the contamination to undetectable levels, while one not only left behind nearly two logs of the contamination on the original disk, but also transferred nearly that much to a clean disk as shown in the inset graph. Here are the main messages from this and the previous slide. A wipe with a properly formulated disinfectant in it can remove equal to or higher than 5 logs of colony-forming units of vegetative bacteria from a surface in only 5 seconds of wiping. Wipes with weaker formulations may remove bacterial contamination but without insufficient inactivation with the viable organisms available for transfer to clean surfaces. This is especially true when wipes with strong detergents may be good at removing the contamination but then breaking it up for easier transfer. The international collaborative mentioned before has expanded these studies much further, and the data are being readied for publication soon. Next slide, please. These figures tell you what else is happening in the development of other ways to decontaminate high-touch surfaces. Certain of these are called no-touch because they require no direct contact with the surface or object to be decontaminated. The testing of microbicide impregnated or microbicide coated surfaces is often by depositing on each a wet inoculum of the test organisms. While they may meet the test requirements under those conditions, how would they perform when the contamination is dry or with low water activity? That remains an open question. Devices based on UV light have certain advantages in having broad spectrum microbicidal activity, freedom from adding chemicals to the air while being easier to install, maintain, and use. However, sublethal exposure to UV can cause mutations, and many types of organisms are inherently able to repair UV damage. Such factors must be taken into consideration in testing. As you may know, several alloys of copper have been approved by the US EPA as self-sanitizing, and there is a big push to make surfaces and objects out of such alloys for use in healthcare setting. The methods used to make such claims of microbicidal activity, self-sanitizing activity of such surfaces remain under review. Steam-based portable devices have certain attractive features of their own. Steam can be broad spectrum, fast acting, and chemical free, but the testing of such devices remains a challenge. Most of what is listed here is experimental, and much work is yet needed to prove their robustness, broad spectrum microbicidal activity, and cost effectiveness. Also, and without exception, these technologies will require a substantial initial investment, additional training of staff, downtime, and ongoing upkeep. Another issue to consider would be the potential for any negative impact on the integrity of the materials being decontaminated repeatedly. I don't believe that the need for conventional wiping of surfaces for decontamination is likely to disappear soon. In fact, there is a huge upsurge of interest in prepackaged wipes for use in healthcare and other settings. Next slide, please. I'm happy to say that all the complaining about the microbicide test methods is beginning to show some positive changes. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD for short, took it upon itself to coordinate the selection and international collaborative testing of a platform of quantitative carrier tests to assess environmental surface disinfectants. In July this year, it published a guidance document on 4 unified harmonized methods for use in its 34 member states for testing disinfectants against vegetative bacteria, viruses, fungi, and mycobacteria, A similar guide for testing sporocyte may come later. The test methods, based on our center's work over the past two decades, are more stringent and also yield more reproducible data. As said earlier, ASTM has a better wipe test developed by the EPA. A test protocol based on the Viperator is now under consideration as a work item by ASTM International. Recently, an AOAC-sponsored panel of experts completed a review and updating of the EPA's guidance document for testing environmental surface disinfectants for their activity and label claims against the spores of Clostridium difficile. The changes approved relate to better characterization of the spores to be used in testing and the need for a standardized soil load in the microbial test suspension. Health Canada is now in the process of updating its guidelines, which include the requirements for testing environmental surface disinfectants. The period for public comment ended recently. Next slide, please. Those who have heard me before or read my writings will be well familiar with these points. I repeat them here to refresh your memory and also to familiarize others with the issue. One thing is for sure, I'll keep on making the same point till there is evidence for corrective action against them. I beseech regulators, infection preventionists, and companies alike to put to rest the practice of label claims against bug of the month. This practice is not based on science, but is tantamount to marketing through the fear factor. We must abandon the practice of testing environmental surface disinfectants against organisms that do not survive drying well and thus have a low potential for spread via such vehicles. Since most environmental surface disinfectants are applied by wiping, we must start testing them with the wiping action incorporated for label claims. Instead of just reformulating environmental surface disinfectants with weak or potentially unsafe actives, manufacturers must spend the resources on the discovery and development of safer and better microbicidal products. I realize that current government regulations often stifle such developmental activities and make research and development and product registration uneconomical. Discussion is needed on how to streamline the whole process. The private sector may be more amenable to investing in such R&D if there is international harmonization of disinfectant testing and registration. Last but not least, we must train and monitor the housekeeping staff better and also recognize them more for the crucial role. In my view and experience, training and monitoring of the staff responsible for the routine decontamination of high-touch surfaces remains woefully inadequate. This constitutes a weak link in the whole process of infection prevention and control, while potentially undermining the best laid efforts in developing and testing of environmental surface disinfectants. Next slide, please. I repeat that the whole business of formulating, testing, registration, and the actual use of environmental surface disinfectants needs an urgent and critical review. I often feel that the process of decontaminating high-touch environmental surfaces is no more than a ritual in many settings. For some reason, we continue to use products with limited and weak microbicidal activity. Is this primarily due to cost savings alone, or a continuing lack of appreciation of the issues on the part of materials managers as well as infection preventionists? The long contact time on labels on environmental surface disinfectant simply cannot be justified any longer. Regrettably, we continue to use many potentially toxic and environmentally damaging chemicals as environmental surface disinfectant with no real justification. We must refine the testing of wipes and promote their proper use. Whenever possible, we must counter scenarios where there is risk of sublethal exposure of nosocomial pathogens to microbicides. This is vital to preventing the development of microbicide and antibiotic resistance. In closing, I request infection preventionists not only to become better aware of the issues, but also to be more proactive in dealing with them. Here is a key, next slide, please. Here is a list of key publications on the topics just covered. Next slide, please. Thank you for your participation and patience, and please redirect any questions to Paul Weber, and I will do my best to answer them as efficiently as possible. I thank you very much again.
Thank you so much, Professor Sattar, for the wonderful, crisp, to-the-point presentation. With this, I would like to mention to the participants one more time that if they had any questions, they should direct these questions to Paul Weber, and these will be then sent across to Professor Sattar, who will do his best to get you the answers. So with that, I think I'll hand over the floor to Paul to make the final closing comments. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. If there are questions, please do forward them. The email address is simply paul@webertraining.com. Thank you to all of the audience and to Drs. Engineer and Sattar, to you both. Again, fabulous job, and thank you very much. So we'll talk to you all again very soon. Goodbye.